Oh, hello everyone, welcome back to the Rewatchmen. This is TC here, and with me today I do not have my regular cohort in Ben. Today I have a lovely guest with me. Say hello, guests.
Hello there, interwebs.
Introduce yourself so people know who the hell they're listening to.
My name is Steve, and I work with this guy.
That's right, we are co-workers, I believe is the word that people use. About people who work together in a...
I believe so.
That sounds true. Well, welcome to the podcast today. I guess since you're new to the cast, there you might bring in new listeners who might not know what this whole thing's all about. So let me just explain. The Rewatchmen, what we do here is we pop in old movies that people hold near and dear to their heart in one way or another, and we rediscuss them after not seeing them for so long. We rewatch them, if you will. Yes, yes. So today I brought you on because Ben's out of town. He's been celebrating the new year for like a week now.
That must be nice.
Yeah, he's on some sort of northern tour. It's a nudist colony, I think. If I had to guess. He's not here to tell me otherwise, so I'm just going to assume.
I envy him. We've been working the new year.
but anyway, tell me about yourself.
Well, I'm a crappy filmmaker that wants to aspire to be a greater filmmaker.
Mm-hmm. So like Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, as a crappy filmmaker.
Yeah.
Oh!
Exactly. <Uh-oh. laughs> And he's got a new movie, actually.
He does have a new movie. Are you talking about Red State?
No, he's got a new one coming out.
Another one. Is this the hockey one?
It's the hockey one. It's going to be a huge epic.
We'll see about that. If it's more like Dogma and less like everything else he's ever done, then yes, it will be in the realm of epic.
God, what is it called? I just read it too.
Oh well.
I know it's like 150 minutes long.
Well, that's pretty long for a Kevin Smith movie.
Yeah, he was going to split it up in two pieces and decided he's going to make some giant epic hockey movie.
Well, who does he think he is? The Twilight movies? Bringing two parts there. Yes, yes. As long as it's taught. Oh, I don't know if I can handle that much dialogue in over 2 hours. It's like a mammoth movie.
Yeah. They're going to be fighting on the hockey, on the ice, and then start talking.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Empire! Jedi!
Lord of the Rings sucks!
I can only assume it being a Kevin Smith movie that that's going to be how the majority of the dialogue goes. We kind of tangented there. So you're a filmmaker yourself.
Yes.
That's cool.
Yeah, and, I mean, like...
Who would you compare yourself to? And you know what? The chance that anyone that doesn't know you is going to look up any of your stuff is pretty nil. So you can compare yourself to whoever you want, and they'll believe you.
I aspire to be early Spielberg-ish.
Oh, wow.
You know, I love that guy. His early work, it just reminds me of the magic of cinema, you know?
So, like, Drive, is that the made-for-TV movie he did about the trucker? The crazy truck?
Yeah.
That early Spielberg? Or maybe a little past that?
Like, that and Jaws, you know? Like, I mean, Jaws is, you know, I love that movie. The Close Encounters.
We rewatched Close Encounters.
I know.
We did not enjoy it.
I happen to really like it. I mean, it really drags some parts. But...
You know, the whole purpose of this is to rewatch stuff and kind of like approach it from a new point of view. And having enjoyed Spielberg for so long and not having seen Close Encounters of the Third Kind in its entirety, I think I waited too long to reach that point because all of this stuff over time has gotten a little more pumped up.
Yeah, definitely.
And Close Encounters is such a cerebral piece.
I think he did Close Encounters right after Jaws.
Yeah, it's
Jaws,
very, very early in his career.
Jaws is like perfectly paced in my opinion.
Actually, you know what? I don't know what I'm talking about because Jaws still holds up. I love Jaws. Actually, my older sister is afraid of sharks because of Jaws.
I think I am too, to be honest.
She can't eat, she doesn't like strawberries, and she's afraid of Jaws. Those are the only things I know about my sister.
I can barely drive up here, and I won't go in the water if I think there's a shark.
I won't, I hover when I go to the bathroom, because if I'm sitting there, I might get too comfortable, and a shark will come out through the bowels of, below my bowels, and bite my bowels.
Exactly.
Or my bowels. There's a picture of my older sister when she was, I think, five, maybe four or five, and she's at Walt Disney World when they had Bruce the Shark hanging. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever been there or you're aware of it, but they have the full model Bruce the Shark hanging by its tail.
Yeah, in Amity Village, right?
Yeah, and she's underneath it looking up into its mouth, this tiny little girl below the mouth of Jaws. And my grandpa kind of forced it upon her when she's very little, so she hates sharks. She hates sharks now.
Well, to segue from that, they actually just tore all that down at Universal Studios Orlando.
Yeah.
They took down the whole thing. They got rid of the Jaws ride over there, which I got to watch on YouTube because I never got to go on it.
Oh, man.
And they're making some Harry Potter crap there now.
Well, they built the Harry Potter world.
They're expanding
it. Expanding it.
Well, and they got rid of Jaws for it. Like, what the hell, man?
Well, maybe they'll redo it because Peter Jackson redid King Kong at Universal Studios Burbank.
This is true, yeah.
And compared to the old one, because it burnt down, there was that fire 2-3 years ago.
Which totally sucked.
Yeah. And
we saved the clock out.
Yeah.
Clock
tower. Save the clock tower.
Yeah.
I mean, I put my quarter in the jar. I will save that clock tower.
I passed out flyers.
Yeah, here's a quarter, lady. But they redid King Kong, and now it's better than ever. It's that 360 3D.
Yeah, I haven't gone on it yet.
But I hear it's insane.
I've heard it's cool.
So maybe the new Jaws will be more epic, you know, but maybe Jaws doesn't need to be more epic.
It doesn't. I mean, like, I saw the sharks. They looked just as fake as the original one. I mean,
sharks still looks fake. Yeah. Oh, did I just give 2 Back to the Future references in less than a minute? I did. And one from one and a second quote from two. Thank
Pow!
You. That's how I do it here. That's how I do it. Oh, man. Well, a pleasure to have you here on the
I'm
podcast.
Happy to be here.
There's a couple people in my life where if I start talking movies, it'll just go on and no work will get done. And that's how Ben and I actually got started. The history of the Rewatchmen comes from working with Ben. He would come hang out with me while I was doing whatever. And
much like what I do.
Yeah, and we would just start talking movies, and 3 hours later, like, holy cow, 3 hours have gone by? We should have recorded that.
Yeah.
And he eventually convinced me to start recording our conversations, and hence the Rewatchmen were born. we have, you know, we've done all right. We did the best of the decade to end our first season, and we had a few hundred listens, which was pretty exciting.
Nice.
So, I mean,
I haven't even added my number to that list yet, so I'm gonna join in soon.
We'll see if you don't bring in some more listens.
I hope some of my friends want to hear me ramble on for a couple of hours.
I'm sure
an hour and a half.
For your friends, much like Ben's friends, they will say to you, that TC guy talks too much. Because I can only assume that's what people say. Because I have to edit these things.
Yeah.
And I sit and listen and I'm like, God, shut up. You don't know anything. Who is this guy? TC.
Well, my friends
totally
think
crappy.
I talk about this stuff too much, so maybe they're just going to both all be sick of both of us. You know?
An hour and a half into it, why am I still listening to this? I love people like that who will complain about something but still enjoy it in its entirety.
Like Star Wars.
Like Star Wars. We were just discussing that out on the balcony. It's like, oh, I hate it. I hate it. I mean, I'm still going to see it, but I hate it.
Still going to pay you $100 for Tarnished Dreams.
Yeah, but just for the record, I hate it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wonder if he modeled some of the Gungans after.
The Gungans. All right. Does anybody have any ideas of what the Gungans can look like? Yeah, George. How about this character is called Boss. Boss Nass. I kind of like his look. The whole thing he's got going on the. Yeah, I like that. We should make.
He doesn't know. I totally modeled it after him. He's got that stupid wig and everything.
I mean, actually, I would imagine there are animators for him that do crap like that, because animators do that sort of thing. The Sorcerer's Apprentice from the original Fantasia, mm-hmm. right? The Mickey Mouse, and then there's the Wizard.
Yeah.
The Wizard is designed after Walt Disney himself.
Mm-hmm.
The looks that he does with his eyebrows, I guess it was all these inside jokes with that animation. Just like the looks he would give Mickey and the beady eyes and the stern posture and everything. It was all Walt, and Walt didn't know.
He totally doesn't know.
We totally got it.
It's him. It's him.
Yeah.
All right. Well, one of the things we usually kick off with is some news. And I made a cool new song. You like this? This is the new song. Pretty good, huh?
Yeah.
It's got a good ring to it. This is the remix.
So, remix.
You being the guest, I should ask you if you have any news stories to share with the kind people who come to us for all their entertainment purposes.
Well, I've got a couple.
You've got a couple. Hit me with a good one. Come on.
So we'll start this off with Joel Edgerton is officially going to be doing Catherine Bigelow's Osama Bin Laden pick. And it had been said that he was going to do it before, mm-hmm. but I guess there was going to be some issues with production, like timing up with his stuff.
Okay.
And I guess he turned down the 300 sequel. Probably a great choice for him.
Which was probably the best thing he could do. He could make a piece of crap popcorn mm-hmm. flick.
Yeah.
Sequel to a piece of crap popcorn flick. Whatever. An overrated popcorn flick. To do something that could potentially win him an Oscar.
Yeah.
What could people know Joel Edgerton from?
So, most recently, he did Warrior and The Thing.
The
Thing prequel. In The Thing, I thought he totally was, like, the Kurt Russell character.
He's the, he's not Tom Hardy.
No.
Right, he's the other guy.
He's the other guy, yeah.
So, if we may bring this back to, and which we tend to do often, he's Uncle Owen.
Yeah.
He's the young Uncle Owen from those prequels.
He is, huh? and he was also in a movie called Animal Kingdom. It was an Australian flick that was nominated for Best Picture last year.
Oh.
And I did have the pleasure of watching it. Mm-hmm. And he was only in it for a little bit, but he was awesome. He was the character you're like, dude, I want to see more of you.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah. I'm really glad he turned down 300.
Oh, hell yeah.
I mean, especially for the next Catherine Bigelow flick. I mean, after Hurt Locker, I'm all in for her.
Yeah, she's good for her.
Yeah.
Take that, James Cameron.
They have an ending for it now.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm spoiler. He dies.
Really?
I think so.
Oh, my. Good God. America.
Yeah. So I'm just going to assume Will Smith will be playing Barack Obama. Am I safe in assuming that it's either going to be him or Fred Armisen from SNL? Yeah.
I'm rooting for Fred.
Yes. Suddenly it's a comedy. That is cool news though. That so is he going to be playing the titular role of
I believe so,
Mr. Barack Obama? No, Bin Laden. Oh no, they're the same guy. All right,
they all look alike.
I don't know if you know, but it is him in a mask.
He just shaved the beard.
Yeah, that's it. Very cool. Very cool. It's nice to see a competent actor have a slow build. It's a lot of times when actors break out, then they fizzle. I think it's more interesting when people get a slow rise to their stardom, much like Heath Ledger did, or Matt Damon.
Matt Damon.
Isn't it sad that Matt Damon gets that? That's not even anything he's ever done. That's straight out of Team America.
Yeah,
Matt Damon, and the South Park guys don't even dislike Matt Damon.
I'm sure they like him.
Neither of them could do an impression of him. So instead of any of the dialogue they had written for him, they would just get to the Matt Damon dialogue, and one of them would go, Matt Damon! And that's it. Anyway, I digress. Just hammer this bad boy out.
Sounds like there won't be a lot of post, which makes me happy.
Yeah.
Less CGI, the better.
Oh, I agree. And speaking of CGI and the less the better, let's talk about the Akira remake.
Oh, that they get put on hold?
It got put on a definite hold, an indefinite hold. Warner Brothers, for those of you who don't know, wanted to remake the Akira film. We've been talking on the rewatch in the past few episodes, but
I've never actually seen Akira.
Oh wow! Oh well, if you haven't, and for those of you listening, if you haven't seen Akira, it is a pivotal anime. It is one of the movies that bridged the Japanese filmmaking to American filmmaking. If you are into anime, you've seen Akira. If you are curious about anime, I mean, if you don't know if you can enjoy it, even though this movie, the original Akira came out in the 80s,
yeah,
the animation is so dynamic. And that's one thing that the Asian cinema animated cinema has over American cinema. Action scenes are just insane. I mean, the best Batman animated series episodes with the best action done in Japan.
Huh.
They exported their episodes to get the action.
Really? Yeah. I had no idea.
Yeah. It's so a lot of the Batman animated series comes from Japanese animators.
And I've watched anime. I mean, like, I've watched, like, Naruto and Bleach.
Well, some of those are as watered down as you can get from something like Akira, which is this great... I mean, it's based on a comic book that is, like, thousands of pages, and they managed to make it an 80-minute movie. So imagine how much they cut out.
Yeah.
But the imagery and the images that come out of Akira, there's some insane motorcycle chases. And the whole premise is it's this Neo-Tokyo future post-apocalyptic sort of thing.
It's like the Blade Runner of anime.
Yeah, there you go. That's a perfect way to put it. And it's this teenage kid who gets caught up in a government program that is interested in telekinesis and pyrokinesis and just mind powers. And he goes crazy, and then he starts blowing up like a giant balloon. But it's disgusting and wet and mechanical and... there's an episode of South Park early on in the second season where... It's the Trapper Keeper episode. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the episode?
No, I'm not.
It's a mix of Terminator and Akira where Cartman's Trapper Keeper. It's a Dawson's Creek Trapper Keeper. It comes to life and starts absorbing all the technology around it. And then by the end of the episode, Cartman has mutated into this giant blobby thing. That's an Akira parody. So, for those of you who've seen that episode, you've sort of seen what Akira is all about. All that being said, it's a wonderful film, but it's Asian. And America wanted to remake it by casting an all-American dumb kid. Like, and they're teenagers, but they're going to cast 20-something-year-olds. I mean, Kaneda is the main...
Shia LaBeouf or something.
Or they wanted Keanu Reeves, who's almost 40, if he's not over 40, to play a 17-year-old guy. Well, he just won't be 17 anymore. Whatever. Anyway, all that being... That horrible information being said.
Why not just not regurgitate it and make everybody watch the original?
Yeah, the original, they wanted like $200 million to make this Americanized version. And then Warner Bros. Was like, no, I'll cut it down. Another director came on and made $90 million. And Warner Bros. Was like, can you get it to $20 million? But I don't know how you're going to make a movie that is going to need that much CG for $20 million unless you get Neil Blomkamp to do it. And if Neil Blomkamp did it, that's the guy who did District 9.
Yeah.
And we get that would be an Akira right there. I'd be okay with that. If they want it for that little money, get him to do it, and I'll be okay.
I just rather... I mean, I haven't seen the original, but I'm all for not remaking everything ever made.
It's true.
So let's just leave it alone. Maybe we could do, like, a cool theatrical run again. Re-release it to theaters. We did it for Ghostbusters. I mean, Ghostbusters is... Ghostbusters, right. But still, I mean, I know there'd be people that would watch in theaters.
There are cinephiles, you or me. I mean, we hear Raiders of the Lost Ark is playing on a big screen. We're going to go see it. And we're going
to fight children to see it.
We'll pay the full ticket price to see it. But the regular movie-going audience, would they be interested in seeing something like Akira if it wasn't brand new? I don't want to see some animated film from the 80s. Blah.
Well, you make a good point. I mean... When I watched Ghostbusters, there was me, a family, and some guy wearing a Venkman t-shirt.
There you go.
And a couple of my buddies.
Real fans.
Yeah. I have to admit, though, I was kind of jealous of the kids. I mean, I wish I would have been that age to watch it alive.
There's this great YouTube video of these two kids watching Empire Strikes Back for the first time. Oh. And it's a video. It's only like 45 seconds long, but it's of the... Luke, I'm your father moment.
I think I saw that.
Yeah, and the kid's face is like, oh, what?
Yeah.
What? I can't believe it. It's just so...
This can't be happening.
Oh, man. Who was I talking to? I mean, it was Candace, but I was saying, I want to hire a hypnotist to hypnotize me to forget. And you know how, if you ever, you know hypnosis, it wears off. It's not permanent.
Yeah.
But hypnotize me to forget I ever saw The Dark Knight. So I can, or Back to the Future, or Ferris Bueller's Day Off, or Raiders of the Lost Ark, or Jaws for the first time.
Or Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back. Just to experience it for the first time, for real, all over again. I mean, how amazing would that be? And videotape it, too. Because once the hypnosis wears off, I'll forget.
Yeah.
And then I'll be able to watch my reaction. And I just think that'd be so cool.
That would be amazing.
To be like The Usual Suspects, watch that all over again so they get that ending like, what?
You did what?
Out of here.
He's what?
Or, you know, not The Sixth Sense, but just to re-watch movies I love for the first time and see if I love them all over again.
I will look into it for you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Ray, do you have another news story?
I got some Mondo tidbits.
What's Mondo?
So Mondo is this awesome poster company. They release posters for new movies, old movies. They've done some TV shows now, like Adventure Time. They have not done a video game poster yet, but they are going to be. They said, this is part of the news, actually. They said that they have the rights to a really big one.
But they don't say which it is?
They won't say who it is. It's a big studio.
Zelda?
Personally, they're based in Texas, so I'm hoping maybe ID Software or BioWare.
Okay. Does BioWare have anything coming out soon?
They have Mass Effect 3 coming out.
There you go. That seems likely.
Yeah, that would be awesome. I would be in line for that one.
By the way, was that your news?
So they make these great posters. They're all like really nice stock paper, screen printed, very limited editions. They sell out within minutes online.
And then they go on eBay for hundreds of dollars.
Easily. They get awesome artists, Ollie Moss, Tyler Stout, Ken Taylor, and they just make beautiful prints. I love them. Mm-hmm. But they talked about three different movies. And they said that for sure is one is being made this year. They wouldn't say which one, I would guess, but I'll tell you which one I guess it is.
Okay.
But the three movies is Ghostbusters, Back to the Future.
I want...
Attack the Block.
Oh, cool.
Now, I think it's going to be Attack the Block. I think that's probably the easiest of the rights to get.
Oh, so it's one of those three?
For sure this year.
Back to the Future! Sorry, I'm okay.
It's okay, big guy.
It's okay. Just really excited. I love that future. Cool movie.
I'm right there with you, buddy.
Okay.
So they did have the rights to get the Ghostbusters at one point, but as he was reading the contract, they said that he could not use a Ghostbuster. So he could use everything but one of the Ghostbusters.
That's weird. Well, then Slimer, I guess?
Yeah, I mean... But they said no, they wouldn't do it unless they can get the Ghostbusters. If they're going to do it, they want to do it right.
Right.
So, hats off to those guys. And they're planning some more mystery movies. I think we'll get another round out here in L.A. And I'm excited for that. I got to go to one, and it's frightening, because you don't know what movie you're going to get, so you don't know what poster you're going to get.
Okay.
You're scared it's like an U-Bowl movie or something, you know?
In the Name of the King 2.
I mean, I got The Mist, but...
Frank Darabont's Mist?
Yes.
That's not too bad.
Which I hear the black and white version is much better and more tongue-in-cheek.
I've only seen the
colored version.
The remake that Darabont did.
Yeah. No, he also, if you get the Blu-ray apparently, there's a black and white version on there of the same film.
Oh, you telling me I pay full price for a movie that ain't even in color?
Yeah.
God, that's bull.
And that's exactly why I went to color.
I read, too. I don't go to movies to read. Well, that's very cool news. For those of you who haven't checked out the Mondo, just Google it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
MondoTees.com.
Good t-shirts, too.
Yeah, they do. They have some really cool ones.
All right. Well, I got an interesting little bit of movie news here.
All right, let's hear it.
Another topic of conversation we've been having for the past several podcasts is about the Man of Steel coming out.
Oof.
Now, initially, Man of Steel was scheduled to come out for Christmas this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was... Okay, so they wanted the Superman movie made ASAP. So they hired Zack Snyder because he can make a movie right away. And then they got going on pre-production, and Christopher Nolan finished up principal on Dark Knight, and then went to Zack Snyder and said, yeah, we're going to push you to July 2013, so you have a little more time. I'm mostly worried about Man of Steel. Very little about it makes me excited, particularly some of the rumors that have been circulated. I mean, at one point, Lindsay Lohan was rumored to be cast in it. And that ended up not being true. But the simple fact that that rumor existed broke my little comic nerd heart. So here's the most recent one, okay? Comic Book News, this is where I'm getting it, is from Cosmic Book News, reports a massive rumor that none other than Bradley Cooper is set to cameo as Lex Luthor.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Can we just shave Gene Hackman and bring him back? I mean,
Kevin Spacey did all right?
Yeah, Kevin Spacey was pretty good.
Let's see. So, a cameo is Lex Luthor, Zack Snyder, and blah, blah, blah. Warner Brothers is not responding at this time. Surprisingly little has been mentioned about the possible Luthor sightings in the new movie, though it's hard to imagine a Kryptonian hero without Lex Luthor poking his bald head into it.
But of course.
Cameo seems plausible, perhaps as a post-credit scene, which, please, can we stop doing that? That used to be fun. Brief appearance, sort of like Hawkeye in Thor. Still nothing is confirmed, so wishful thinking. See, that's not wishful thinking for me, because can we stop going back to the well?
Yeah.
Can we leave Lex Luthor out of it? It's like, look, Nolan proved you could make a Batman movie without a bad guy anyone has any clue about. I mean, yes, I know who Ra's al Ghul is, and I know who the Scarecrow is. I even know who Zsasz is, but that's because I'm a big old nerd. But the general public went in to see Batman, and he fought some guy they'd never heard of. And it worked. Okay? Yes, Joker came to the Dark Knight, and that made a shit ton of money, but...
Yes.
But why does it have to be Lex again? Why does it have to be Zod in this new movie? There are other villains... I mean, Superman doesn't have the best rogues gallery, I suppose. There's only so many to choose from, but...
They all have to be, like, stupidly powerful, yeah. Or just take Lois Lane, you know? I mean,
help me, Superman! Well, Bradley Cooper, though I do enjoy his work, Hangover, Limitless, one of my favorite movies of 2011. Great, great work. He's kind of a douche. And I suppose if that's the angle you want to go with Lex, but are you going to shave his head? Can we see Bradley Cooper without hair? I don't know.
I mean, that guy's just too tan. he's just too tan.
Hey, the Luthor from the animated series was quite tan.
He was.
He was. People thought he was black. He was just tan. Nothing racist about that, right?
None whatsoever.
Anyway. You should cut that. No, I'm going to leave it. I stand by my words. Those were the Bruce Timm's words, not mine. Anyway.
I mean, like, why not pull out some other villains? I mean, you know, Lex Luthor, he's been in every single one of them, right?
Yeah.
Every single one of them.
Except the third one.
That was Richard Pryor.
It was Richard Pryor. was that Jackie Gleason was the bad guy?
I think so.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Possibly the worst of the Superman movies. I just feel like the more and more and more I hear about this movie, the more it feels like a Fox or a Paramount superhero movie. A Marvel superhero movie.
Yeah.
Why does DC have the greatest superheroes of all time, and Batman aside, the worst superhero movies of all time?
You're telling me. I mean, Green Lantern is like amazing comic books, but the movie was just so...
Yeah, with the double wiper on that one. It was... Yeah, how do they screw it up? Is it because they're trying to compete with the Marvel success?
I think so.
But really, the Marvel success, they're good for the time being, but...
They aren't going to last.
Right. Superman, the 1978 Christopher Reeve Superman, Richard Donner, still holds up.
I agree.
It's still a movie that is worth watching.
Definitely.
And
his cut for the second one, in my opinion. I like the Richard Donner cut.
It's good. I wish he could have finished it because they had to kind of work with unfinished footage, alternate takes, whatever. But I just think the Marvel way of making movies is make them big, make them exciting, make them fun.
Let's see how many we can crap out in a year.
Yeah, I'm interested in the Avengers movie, but I'm not excited. I see that preview. The first preview, I was like, oh, cool. But the more I see about it, the more I'm kind of... I don't know. I mean, what about you? Are you excited for the Avengers?
To be honest, the only reason I am excited is because of Joss Whedon.
Yeah. But how much control is he going to be able to have? Look at what Marvel...
I think he wrote, too.
Well, he was definitely involved in the writing process, but it's Zach Penn who wrote it as far as... I mean, I should look that up before him, but it's the guy who did the X-Men movies. I could be wrong. I should look it up, but...
I feel like I have to put some faith because I'm, like, a fanboy of Joss Whedon's work.
As am I, but it's... Look at what Paramount has done to their directors. Kenneth Branagh did the first Thor. He ain't coming back. Jon Favreau managed to get two Iron Mans, and he's like, screw this, I'm not coming back.
Yeah.
And Bryan Singer, again, did the X-Men's, and that didn't work out, did it?
No, it did not.
So what is the creative control process like? I'm worried if Whedon, I don't know, didn't get to do everything he wanted to do, is Paramount breathing down his neck to do certain things?
I mean, I can tell you that The Avengers is easily not in the top of my list for this year.
Yeah,
I mean,
Zach Penn wrote it.
Oh, God. It's not at the top of my list, but, I mean, I'm going to watch it. I know I'll watch it for sure. But I didn't think Thor was very good. I did not like Captain America.
I'm in agreement. The first half of Captain America before he came Captain America?
Yeah, that was great. Movie. Before they, like, CGI'd all the backgrounds, had weird action scenes, I mean, like... It just turned into a big steaming pile of poop. And I am scared. And I really hope that DC doesn't go down this route of let's make it so we can put all of our superheroes together because we totally need a Justice League movie.
Well, I've stated it before that, okay, so it's common knowledge this is Nolan, he's done. His Batman movie ends. There's even rumors that Batman will die at the end of the movie. Whatever, this is the end of it. Well, they are already... ready to go on the next Batman. I think I told you this. My prediction is Riddler will be the villain.
Yeah.
Because they need a villain people know to introduce this new Batman.
Because we totally need another Riddler.
Well, it's got to be better than Jim Carrey's Riddler.
One could hope, right?
But it seems to me they want a Batman that can exist side by side with Superman, so then they can put those two in a movie together. I just don't see why they just don't make live-action versions of the animated movies. The Bruce Timm's DC animated movies
please
are
make,
so good.
Make Mask of Phantasm now.
Well, okay, not that one. But like the Superman Adventures, the Justice League movies he's done, the Wonder Woman movie, if that was the live-action Wonder Woman movie, it would be as good as the first Iron Man. Have you seen it?
I don't think I have,
Nathan
actually.
Fillion is the male lead in it, if that helps you at all.
I will watch this.
Anyway, that's my news.
So why not Mask of Phantasm? Is it too big of a place in your heart? You don't want to see it tarnished?
I think Mask of Phantasm was great as it is. But, see, okay, it's the same issue I have with Superman and Spider-Man. We don't need the origin anymore. Stop wasting 40 minutes of a movie retelling us how these characters came to be. Just do a Bond. We don't need to know how Bond became Bond. Yes, Casino Royale is a friggin' awesome movie, but do the Bond movies tell you every time how he became Bond? Every time they recast James, do they have to retell his origin how he became James Bond? No! Why?
Because we don't need to.
We don't need to. We know who James Bond is. Just get this party started.
He's just a badass motherfucker with a gun.
The new Spider-Man, the posters say the untold story. I hope the untold story is we're going to skip the origin. Because you know what has been told every single time they make a Spider-Man? The origin! We don't need everyone. My mom knows it. Okay? And the same goes for Superman. Everyone knows who Superman is. We don't need to know how he became Superman. Just go.
Please.
Talk about skipping the first act of a movie. Yes, that's what I see. So with Batman, Mask of the Phantasm has origin elements to it.
It does.
Yeah. And though I do love Mask of the Phantasm.
Because I do love that one.
Yeah, up until Batman Begins, that was my favorite Batman movie. And I know some people will be like, but the two Batman ones. Tune in next week for that conversation. But, yeah, that's why I say no on the Phantasm. But things like the Superman-Batman adventure, they just created Superman-Batman for the TV show. It was a three-part series of episodes, so basically it could be a movie in its entirety, where it's Superman and Batman teaming up for the first time, and Bruce has, or Superman has to dress up like Batman in order to deceive somebody. And it's just cool just how they have completely conflicting points of views. They disagree. Yeah. But to blend Gotham's world into Metropolis's world, Lex and Joker switch enemies so that they make a strangers on a train deal. I'll kill Superman if you kill Batman. Okay, let's trade. It's this really fun, exciting, well-done story. Guess what? No origin. Why? Because we know who these two characters are. Let's just do this.
Why not? I mean, I think those are two of the most regurgitated, like, origin stories. I mean, Superman Superman and Batman. I mean, two of the oldest comic book characters.
Yeah.
We all know how it happens. Bruce's parents get shot, and he falls from the sky.
Yeah, there we go. But no, that's what we're going to get for Man of Steel. You know what? People hate on Superman Returns. It's one of my favorite movies of the past decade. As discussed in a previous podcast, go check them out now, folks.
Pow!
A title card. Superman came from Krypton. His planet blew up. He was raised by Ma and Pa Kent. Boom, let's do this.
Yeah.
30 seconds on the screen. I could rant about this all day long, but in the end, does my voice really matter?
Oh, well, how do you feel about Henry Cavill? Or I'm not sure if I said his name right.
Henry Cavill, whatever. I think he looks good. Like, he looks like Superman. But I just don't, I don't know.
I don't feel it.
Christopher Reeve just embodied Clark and Superman.
Yeah.
And when they cast Superman now, they cast Superman.
They don't think about Clark.
And someone, like, yes, Superman should, see, there's this great comic written by Mark Waid called Birthright.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of a retelling of Superman. It's an updated version of Superman's origin. One of the things they focus on is how he separates Clark from Superman. He takes acting classes. He starts reading acting books. How he dresses. He wears baggier clothing. He changes his posture. He changes his voice. He goes into, like, method acting to create these two different personas, which helps show how conflicted his life is, so that when he can just be himself with Ma and Pa Kent, it's so rare that he gets a chance to do that. They can just relax and just be who he is. Doesn't have to be Clark, doesn't it? But I don't know. I want to see Henry Cavill as Clark. And if he can make a good Clark, then I'll buy it. It's the reverse of Batman. Because if you can get Batman right, Bruce is secondary.
Yes.
If you can get Clark right, Superman's easy. Superman's got the blue, he's got the red, he's punching things, boom. He's the big blue Boy Scout. You just respect him. He's just the best of the best.
Yeah, he's the Boy Scout from a blown-up planet.
I want to care about Clark. And I thought Brandon Routh did a great job tapping into what Christopher Reeve had done for both the characters.
Yeah.
The sympathetic version of Superman. So, I saw Immortals. I don't know if you saw it.
I saw it.
Yeah, and a lot of 300-esque yelling, which is not acting. So I kind of didn't get a...
And he wasn't very good at that either, to be honest.
Was it The Tudors that Henry Cavill's been in?
Yes, my mom's all about it. He was also in the remake of The Count of Monte Cristo.
Oh, man, that was a long time ago.
Yeah.
Well, and I guess I'll just... I mean, again, we were just saying before, I'm going to see it.
Yeah, I mean...
I want it to be good, but my expectations...
I won't watch The Phantom Menace, but I'll probably watch Superman just because of Nolan's name.
Yeah.
Fanboy!
Fingers crossed. Well, you fit in right at the podcast, because we here at The Rewatchmen are fanboys of the Nolan.
Rightfully so.
So, well, anyway, that's enough with news. Why don't we take a break here? We're going to watch a movie today.
Yes, we are.
Yeah, and it was... You made the call.
I did. Yes. It's one of my favorite movies.
I have not seen it since college.
Oh.
But we will discuss it soon. So we're going to take a break here, folks. Get yourself something to eat, get yourself something to drink, and we'll be back just shortly with our re-review of...
Apocalypse Now.
Apocalypse Now. The apocalypse is near.
The horror.
The horror. The horror.
The horror.
I'm not afraid to
was a pretty intense break.
So so you picked the movie of discussion this week.
Yes, I did.
Apocalypse Now. Just quick run. I'll just summarize real quick. 1979. They started filming in 1976. Which could be an entirely different conversation unto itself, the making of this film.
Yes.
Directed by Francis Ford Coppola. Stars Martin Sheen. That's Charlie Sheen's dad, for you folks who didn't know that out there. Marlon Brando for all of, 15 minutes?
Yep.
14-year-old Lawrence Fishburne. Robert Duvall as Kilgore.
Yeah. Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper's in there. Man, Dennis Hopper's in there.
Man.
Harrison Ford looking quite young.
How do you son Ford?
But basically it's a guy, Colonel Kurtz, played by Brando's gone bananas somewhere out in Cambodia. And Martin Sheen is hired to go kill him.
Yep.
And that's the movie.
The rough adaptation of Heart of Darkness.
Heart of Darkness, the novel by Conrad. Full name, but yeah, Heart of Darkness, classic piece of American literature, one of considered by many to be one of the essentials of American literature, and this movie itself being one of the essentials of American cinema.
Yeah,
on many best of lists, top 50, top 25,
top 10 for me.
Top 10, ooh, top 10 for me. Okay, well, what is it about this film that that just go ahead, start talking? That's what we do. Just jump right in.
For me, this movie, it just kind of really embodies what I imagine Vietnam to be. I mean, you hear all the stories of all the messed up things that happen, you know, and this really just surrounds you in this darkness, you know, and you really see through the cinematography and everything as they're traveling down this river how much darker it keeps getting.
River of hell.
Yes.
One bad thing after the other.
I mean, it's always resonated with me. I think the first time I saw this was 11 or 12 years old.
Holy cow, man.
Yeah.
That's heavy stuff for a kid.
Yeah. And I was blown away back then. Obviously, I don't think I truly grasped it until my later teens.
But there's something there that captured your young mind. I watched this in college. I had a literature course where we read Heart of Darkness. And we watched the movie over a course of a few classes. And being that it was, you have to read this and you have to watch it, I kind of had a bad attitude about it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't enjoy reading anything, really, until after I was done with school. Once I had my degree in hand, then I was like, you know what I think I want to do? Read. I don't have to anymore, so thus I like it. But it was with the movie, I know it's one of those cinematic masterpieces that you have to see this if you consider yourself a fan of cinema. But the most, I knew the important parts about it. I knew the line, I love the smell of napalm in the morning.
The horror.
The horror. The horror. I knew that the Animaniacs had done a whole episode of this. I knew that the Doors were the soundtrack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I knew that it was hellacious to make. What more do I need to know, right?
Yeah. Right?
And now, having seen it again and actually having rapt attention with it. Wow.
It's heavy stuff. I mean, you deal with so many different things. I mean, I guess one of the only things you don't really deal with is, like, Agent Orange and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
some of the effects that hit on... Oh, the after effects of war.
I think
is what you're thinking. Well, I mean, did the enemy use Orange, or did
we use the Agent Orange to, like, wipe out, like, wilderness... Okay. Stuff like that.
And chemical warfare.
Yes. And that, in turn, people got cancer later from it and, you know, all that madness. But you do see some of the after effects of war with the way Kurtz describes war and how it's changed him as a person, and Willard, especially. I mean, at the beginning, he's itching to get back in the jungle.
Well, I think this is an example of two people suffering from the same post-traumatic in two very different ways. Mm-hmm. Being involved in war has ruined both their minds.
Yes.
In very extreme ways. Now, it's interesting because it's kind joking. It's kind of vague. It's not specifically this year and this war. It obviously is a statement on Vietnam.
Yes.
And they do discuss that in a way. But the location isn't very... I mean, we know they're going into Cambodia. We know they're going through that area.
Yeah.
But it has a certain... it's unclear in certain respects.
Yeah, and they do a lot of little vague things to tie you back into the time period, with especially with music. I think music and was a big part. The Doors, the Stones popping up on the radio.
Yeah, I mean, it's clear it's about...
Yeah, we're in Vietnam but, era.
But it's not specifically about... I think it's just more about war and the effects of war.
Yeah.
Not Vietnam. I mean, I did Taxi Driver an episode ago with Chad. I don't know if you listened to that.
I caught most of it.
And we discussed the post-traumatic that Travis Bickle goes through and how it affects him being back in the stateside and how he needs to get back into a battle of sorts.
Yes.
Because he is a soldier and the war has just made him that and that alone. He can't be anything else. And I think that's what Willard's going through.
Yeah.
He's a soldier and he has nothing else. He can't be sitting in a hotel room.
Yeah.
He has to be fighting something.
He needs to get back in the ship.
Yeah. And Kurtz, I think, being the older soldier, I think, sees the fertility of war.
Yes. I mean, I don't think they talk about, like, what prior wars Kurtz was in, but from what you can tell about his rank and roughly by his age, he's probably seen at least the Korean War, maybe the end of World War II, maybe, I don't think he might be too young for it. But
yeah, I think at some point Sheen says he's almost 40.
Yeah, so.
38, thank you, I thought so.
38. But the film, it's definitely like throws you into the Vietnam feel, but the story, the core story of it all the story of Heart of Darkness, the book, it just doesn't have to just translate about Vietnam. It's not just a statement on Vietnam, like you were saying. It's very much just about going into this madness.
Descending into hell. And I think if I'm remembering correctly from my literature course, Heart of Darkness, the book, is a reimagining of Dante's tragic comedy, The Inferno.
Oh, I did not know that.
Descending into hell.
Yeah.
And
well, he's on a riverboat, right? And there's, like, the indigenous people.
Yeah, yeah.
But there's no war on outside.
It's a rescue mission, and they're going through Africa in Heart of Darkness.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to rescue Kurtz, but then he gets there, and Kurtz he doesn't want to be rescued.
Yeah. You take this guy out.
Yeah. The movie itself is... See, I wouldn't recommend this to people who want to see Saving Private Ryan. I wouldn't recommend this to people who are expecting to see... Black Hawk Down, that gritty badass gunfight sort of.
Yeah, you will not get that in this film. I mean,
this feels to me like poetry interpreted to the screen.
Agree with you easily.
When we were talking about the smoke, like each section sort of has a colored smoke to it: the napalm yellow, the blue in the USO show, the purple that leads to the characters starting to die, the red at the end. Like the smoke is like. Seems to me chapters in a way.
Yeah.
And I almost feel like each section is a poem, and how do you... It's like music videos to me sometimes. I hear a song, I think this.
Yeah.
When I see a music video, I think, well, that's not what I thought. And that's the way poetry is. I don't necessarily like poetry all that much. I like Dr. Seuss. I like Shel Silverstein. If it rhymes, I'm all over it, but... if I were given a set of poems written by a soldier and said, now write a script based on this, I think my mind would lead more towards Apocalypse Now. And say, well, here's kind of the idea. And a lot of what is being narrated is very poetic. I mean, he's reading T.S. Eliot.
Yeah, I was totally going to say that. Yeah. Kurtz is, you know, saying poetry at the end.
Yeah, even Dennis Hopper's crazy character quotes with the "This is how we die, not with a shout, but a whisper or whimper." Yeah, yeah. And that's also T.S. Eliot. So it's very, very poetic in a way, and that's not necessarily a good thing to some people.
But I think it fits this film so well. I mean, it is poetic with everything. There's just so much going on in the film, and you feel like you just keep. Seeping deeper and deeper into it, and it's just all these different verses.
It's so well crafted. And like I was saying, this isn't for someone who's expecting an action movie.
No, not at all.
Like poetry, like Shakespeare in a way, the longer you're dealing with it, the easier it is to understand, and the more you're able to kind of connect with it.
Yeah.
In the beginning, when you see that opening scene, and Martin Sheen is going nuts, when Willard is in his bedroom, he's freaking out, he smashes his mirror, he's drunk, crying, it's uncomfortable, and the scene where he's being recruited, when Harrison Ford's in there, and the guys are, there's these odd shots where they're getting close-ups of the hands, a knife, and it's this PTSD, it's this soldier's vision of things. I see the knife, I see the hand, I'm aware of the door, I can see my escape.
It's like he's sizing up everything in the room.
And it's very awkward, very weird to watch. And then as the movie goes on, you kind of adapt to the storytelling techniques, the way it's being presented. Mm-hmm. Then by the time you get to the end, if you just showed that last scene with the slaughter of the
people
would be like, what the hell am I watching? But because you
take
that journey with them to get there, by the time that ends, though it is just as weird as the first scene, you're ready for it.
You've
taken the journey to get there. And it's not weird. It makes sense in a sick way.
Yeah. The film is really good at immersing you in with these guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, you definitely, when you watch the film, see them slowly all descending into the heart of darkness.
Yeah.
I'm going to name drop Heart of Darkness a lot because I feel like it's just so much at the core of this. Just those two, three words, you know, just fit everything. I mean, you see, like, Clean getting darker, Chef especially, you start seeing him freak out more and more and more. Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of weird at the end, he becomes a little more calm at the very end.
Acceptance, it's the stages of grief, isn't it?
Yeah. But Lance as well.
Lance gets a little. He comes down from his high.
Yeah.
He sort of accepts it. And it's interesting, the natives that they meet along the way get dirtier and more feral.
Yeah.
Originally, they're in the city. They see people who are farmers. They're wearing their very clean clothes.
Their hats.
They're systematic. But then by the time you get to Kurtz, they're painted white.
Yeah.
They're chanting and chucking spears, and I don't mean that in any sort of racial slur whatsoever.
No.
Now that I said it, people might think that.
Yeah.
But I didn't. anyway, moving on.
And the captain, not the captain, but the...
The boat captain.
The boat captain. Yeah. The whole film, he's holding it up. It's like he's just the big branch of the tree
he's
whatever. Yeah, he's their rock. And as soon as he finally freaks out and snaps is when he dies.
Mm-hmm.
He gets the spear.
Yeah. But as soon as he loses control emotionally, and, you know, the movie's broken up in two discs. It doesn't need to be. It's just under 3 hours. It could easily fit on one disc. I think it's the special features.
I think it's also that, because there's two different versions of the film on there.
But
we did not watch the Redux.
Yeah, we watched the original theatrical release.
Which I think is superior. But.
And I disagree with you because I haven't seen the Redux. which is 40 minutes longer, and sometimes that's not a good thing. Unless it's Lord of the Rings. But I digress.
Yes.
What was I saying? Oh, the people slowly losing it. The boat captain losing his emotions, and that's what gets him killed. But Willard, he's very uninvolved through the course of riding that boat. But as soon as you get to the end of the first disc, the first act,
when
they have to search the boat, and Willard's like, just skip it, let's move on, the mission is this. And then Lawrence Fishburne decides to kill the lady for no reason for a puppy.
Yeah.
And then she's dying, oh, let's bring her to the medic, and he just shoots her.
Yeah.
Cold-blooded, just completely heartless.
Exactly what his character is, and it's... You don't really see any of that, but that moment, that tells you, it describes the character in a million words.
So in control.
Yeah.
He's so in control of everything. He knows what his mission is. He knows how it's going to be executed. Right there in that moment, that's not the same man who's trapped in a hotel room, getting lazy, and freaking out, and punching a mirror. Now, this is a guy who's right into the heat of things. This is what he wants to be doing.
He
wants to be on a mission with a purpose, and his purpose defines him. Purpose is to get to Kurtz.
That scene describes him perfectly. Yeah. And one thing about that scene is I think the boat captain, stops to do that to kind of put his boys back into, they were all like dropping LSD, like getting
to
all
music, dancing,
yeah,
having a good time.
You know, like getting messed up on drugs and stuff. And I think the captain stopped to do that. In my mind, he does it to kind of like, hey, this is what we do. Like, we're soldiers,
right,
you know.
Right.
You know, we got to do our routine. Like, we need, like...
Let's get back on point here.
Yeah, we need to, like, come back together as a group. And then it just totally tears them apart.
Falls
even
apart,
more.
Yeah. And then that really is the beginning. If they hadn't already had a downward spiral,
yeah.
From that point on is when...
The beginning of the end.
Of the end, my friend. we're talking about, you mentioned the dissolves. Like, every scene ends with a dissolve into the next scene.
Yeah.
I think that could be cheesy. You said it's not cheesy, but it could be cheesy.
In a lot of other films, yeah.
I think the undefined line that that Willard is walking, very hazy line,
yeah.
Of the mission, keeping his emotions in check, and what's right and wrong, the gray of what he is, and the gray of what Kurtz has become, is kind of a nice parallel to those dissolves.
Yeah,
I might be reading too much into it, but having the scenes dissolve like that, there's only a couple blackouts to the next scene. Like the end of the first act ends with a blackout.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's because the disc ended or if that was specific. I was always there. And I do remember there was another blackout somewhere too where I thought, good time for a blackout.
Yeah. Because with the dissolves, you just feel like you're still chugging along, going down that river.
Mm-hmm.
You're never.
And it keeps you in that last scene just a little bit longer.
Yeah, you never leave.
The lingering effects of the scene before leaving.
It just
maybe,
hits
maybe
heavier.
Maybe that's a little bit of BS, but I've got a degree in that, so that's how I do.
I doubt it's any BS. Somebody made those decisions. The one thing I wanted to say about the indigenous people, though,
mm-hmm.
at the very end, Kurtz's camp, I thought they were becoming more like the American soldiers, whereas the soldiers were turning more into the natives.
Yeah, the USO show is a good example of that. I can agree with you on that.
With Kurtz's camp, you start seeing some of the real feral, savage, indigenous people are wearing some of the U.S. pants. And
kind of hard to tell who the natives are and who the...
Yeah, but you see some of the guys that, like, the assassin sent to go after Kurtz first. No shirt, he's got the war paint or the paint on his face. I mean, you know, he's becoming more like them, and I thought it was a cool, like... transition between the two, that they're becoming more like each other.
Kind of hard to tell who the enemy is and who are the good guys. It's that gray. It's
yeah.
That haziness that I was just talking about. Yeah.
You want to start talking
yeah.
about Kurtz?
Kurtz himself only appears at the very end of the film. And he's this force of nature. He's not even a defined man. He's always in shadows.
It's Marlon Brando.
Yeah. I understand that the reason he was kept in shadows was for more to hide the fact that he was overweight.
But I think I was going to mention it worked perfectly. I think maybe that was the best thing to happen because the way they lit those scenes, you know, it really hides a lot of him.
It's a very hard-edged lines around his dome.
Yeah.
And his figure.
And there's scenes where you, like, see kind of, like, half his face and it's all black. And the way I interpret it sometimes is, like, he comes off as this great, like, god, the force of nature. And there are times where he talks about the gardenias and stuff, where he's very human, talking about his childhood and stuff.
Right, right.
But then there's that blackness that the guy who decapitates Chef and throws him in your lap, you know? Yeah. And it's very paralleling, like, because he's still human, but he acts as this monster, demon god thing, you
know?
He's
the wolf in the cave in the Neverending Story that wants to kill Atreyu.
Yeah.
Sure, just go with me on that. But no, he is, yeah, it's... Keeping him in shadows, half in shadows, even more than half in shadows, shows that he's that much more engrossed in the darkness that he's in hell. He's one foot out just enough to communicate.
With Willard.
Is he in his right mind? Like, Willard seems to think, okay, he's saying all this garbage, but really he wants to die. He just wants to die like a soldier. Is that true, or is that just what Willard tells himself? I think Willard's telling him... Sorry, answer me. Wait, no, I'll answer. I think Willard wants to die like a soldier. I think Willard is speaking for himself. He doesn't want to die.
Yeah.
Out in the middle of the jungle doing nothing. He wants to go out like a man.
But I think maybe a part of Kurtz is still that human, that other person that grew up with the gardenias.
Yeah.
I always go back to the gardenias. I love the way he says it, too. Yeah. The gardenias.
The gardenias.
But
apparently Marlon Brando's a droopy dog.
Let me tell you about the gardenia. I'm a sad dog.
What was I even going to say?
I live by the Ohio River.
I think a part of him knows that he's mad and insane and he needs to be cut off from the world. I think.
Yeah, maybe he wanted someone who was
worthy to take him out.
It's like, okay, you can keep sending soldiers after me. I'm okay with that. To be killed by someone better than me is all I will accept.
Willard doesn't, like, just slash him while he's sitting. Mm-hmm. He lets him get up. Yeah. And if he's this badass special forces, like, seen everything, done everything, he should be able to somewhat protect himself. But he takes it, and he lets himself just get hacked down like an ox.
Like an ox to the slaughter.
Woo!
And it feels very ritualistic.
Yeah.
In how it happens. And I think Willard is worthy to take out Kurtz. If Kurtz is this force of nature that he's become, if he's this half-god in the shadows.
Well, and there's scenes where it's like very obvious that they're portraying him as this god. Before Willard kills him, they're having the party thing, and they're going to cut the ox. Before they cut the ox and stuff, he's at the top of those stairs, and you see him looking down at the crowd. Mm-hmm. So he's always above everyone. In every scene I've seen, he's always above them.
Right.
Like, even when Willard's first brought in, he's sitting, but he's sitting higher.
He's dominant.
Yeah, he's always higher. And you always think God, higher being above
us. That's a good blocking method, yeah.
But that scene, when he's at the top of those stairs, he also has this huge, like, flooding light behind him. Mm-hmm. Like, ridiculous amount of light coming from behind him. Right. There's no way that a bunch of candles are going to make that much light. But
cinema.
But it definitely gives him that godly feel.
Otherworldly feel.
Yeah.
But he is, you're pointing out that he's dominant in every scene. Mm-hmm. He's submissive when Willard walks in on him.
Yep. He's at his, like, weakest point. Yep.
He's on his knees. He's recording another one of his crazy
rants
to send off to the evil great Satan America.
Yeah.
Which actually kind of contingent into another thing I was going to ask. You being such a... You're more the expert of this film than I. Has it happened, or will it happen, that someone try to modernize this?
Yes. It's actually being done in a video game form.
Okay. That's actually I'm okay with to hear that.
I haven't seen much footage. There hasn't been much released. It takes place in Dubai. Amidst a giant sandstorm. Supposedly going to be some choices you have to make, put you in the heart of darkness. But that's all I know as far as other things coming out along the lines of Heart of Darkness, Apocalypse Now. I'm intrigued for a video game, but I don't feel like...
Cinematically,
I would not be supportive of a remake.
This is one of those films that does not... There's no reason to remake.
Yeah.
But it's been parodied so much. The Simpsons, South Park... They've done it. It's one of
Tropic
those
Thunder.
Tropic Thunder. Yeah. You mentioned Tropic Thunder a bunch of times during the Rob Duvall scenes, the kill
the napalm thing and
destroying the trees.
And actually, Ben Affleck. Sorry, Ben Stiller. Ben Stiller at the end when he's like, "I have a son." He's so like he's totally Kurtz at that point.
Yeah. But as far as remaking it, I wouldn't agree that it needs to be remade, but at the same time, the message is not that... I'm sorry, what am I trying to say here? Vietnam is being compared to Afghanistan, the Iraq War, time and again.
Yeah.
It's a big mistake, we shouldn't be there.
And I think that's why they're going that direction of Dubai.
With the game,
the modern setting for the game. And I wouldn't be totally against, like, a Heart of Darkness, like, film, you know, but... Don't try and remake Apocalypse Now.
Right. And that's where I agree with you. I don't think they should remake. Yeah, you're right. Trying to remake Apocalypse Now, bad idea. But trying to make a movie that is an homage to it.
Yeah.
Because the idea of a soldier losing himself in war is not a, it wasn't a new idea in Apocalypse Now, and it's still an idea today.
It echoes in Hurt Locker.
Yeah. It's a good example. In fact, that's a good recommendation.
I have some other ones for later.
Right. But bring up Hurt Locker again later. What else is there to say about the film?
The production side of everything. I know I was spouting out little random things that I remembered from the documentary Hearts of Darkness.
Hearts of Darkness, for those of you who may not be aware. I don't know if it's on Netflix, but one of the best documentaries around.
Yeah.
This movie was plagued with problems. It's one of the biggest train wrecks of a film that yielded one of the best results.
Which is another part of the parody in Tropic Thunder.
Right. But it's so many problems with this movie, trying to get it made.
Releasing it, cutting it, like everything.
It took a year just to cut an edit on it. Marlon Brando wouldn't learn his lines. He was a huge
overweight. Yeah. Martin Sheen had a heart attack while filming. I mean,
that's what this movie did to a man. It gave him a heart attack.
One of the things I love in the movie is just the amount of practical effect. You said it as soon as that tank runs into the building.
Yeah.
I mean,
nowadays someone would
just CG the whole damn thing, mm-hmm. and it loses the immersiveness that this film really is putting all of its money on.
Right.
I mean, if you're not immersed in this film, you're not invested. You don't care anymore. And
some CG artists could do a million hours trying to render a tank would have all the nicks and cuts on it, but those nicks and cuts were put there by math.
Yeah.
The nicks and cuts that came from that actual tank and those 40 helicopters flying through, like you couldn't create that. Artificially, you couldn't create
that. A lot of those with the helicopters, those were in use in the Filipino army.
You can borrow my helicopters, but we are fighting rebels, so every now and then we'll need them back.
Yeah.
Interesting, speaking of CG, is that George Lucas was originally going to direct this.
Yes.
Pre-Star Wars. He hadn't done Star Wars yet.
Luckily, he got Star Wars, so he didn't do it. I believe that was the reason he didn't do it.
Yeah.
It was because Coppola had such success with The Godfathers that he would be able to get the funding for this film. Okay. That's why Coppola went ahead with it.
Think of the world we'd live in if George Lucas had directed Apocalypse Now.
We wouldn't have Star Wars.
Is that a good or a bad thing? I don't know. But
it would have been bad.
For those of you playing along at home, a George Lucas reference, take a shot. Okay. So
another wonderful character is Duvall's character of Kilgore.
Mm-hmm.
That guy, awesome. I mean, I love how he's so gung-ho about killing these guys, but in the end, all he cares about is surfing.
Yeah. Look at them waves down there.
Yeah.
Hey, can I get your autograph?
Yeah. look at the swells, man. 6 foot swells.
Well, what does that say about a soldier of his rank who, based on a real guy even, is that... who gives a crap? I'm just blowing up an entire village of people. Hey, shoot those people down there. They're running. Hey, get that van going across the bridge. Whatever. Anyway, let's talk about surfing. Like, completely devoid of emotion.
Yeah.
Completely detached from reality.
I think that just speaks to the soldier that's seen it all.
Mm-hmm.
And just numb to all of that. All he cares about is what he enjoys, you know?
And with so much bravado,
you gotta
wonder if at the end of the day he thinks about what he's done, or if he really just doesn't care.
I would go with the latter of those choices. The one creepy guy at the very beginning when Willard is getting his mission.
Right, so it's Harrison Ford, the general getting the order, and then the weird guy who's just sitting there.
Yeah, and he doesn't say anything except kill with extreme prejudice. Like, mm-hmm. whoa.
That's all they say.
Creepy the whole time. He's the only one that eats the whole shrimp.
Yeah.
Which is horrible, by the way. I mean, I've tried it.
Don't eat whole shrimp.
Don't do it. Get it out of its shell.
Yeah, but he's in a suit and tie. Like, he's in a shirt and tie. He's not a soldier at all.
No.
He's a guy, he's an analyst. He's the paperwork side of things. And there's those people in every war who never leave the war room.
Mm-hmm.
Who can say, hey, here's your mission, go do it. I'm gonna eat some shrimp.
Now, see, one of the things about him, though, he doesn't look like the American...
pencil pusher?
Yeah. He looks like he might be from the other side of the war, maybe. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy, but mm-hmm. he just doesn't look like, I'm American. Like, everybody in that film, like, that's American. You're like, oh, that's an American. That's an American. This guy, he seems like he's in between the two.
I wonder if that's sort of the, if that's to be believed. I've
used
a weird looking dude, but if let's sling some BS here, having him look non-American, making him have this sort of ambiguous look about him is what bureaucratic paper pushers are. They aren't.
Yeah.
They aren't the real Americans. They aren't the Americans who get their hands dirty. They are in a clean white shirt, eaten with a fork and knife. He was the only one using silverware in that scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, he doesn't get his hands dirty.
He's the only one eating.
Yeah.
Oh, no, the general, I think, takes a bite.
But he's not getting his hands dirty. He's very clean, and it's very alien compared to the other characters. Even Harrison Ford's character is this nervous young soldier when...
Fine performance.
Right, well, yeah. And for what little he had there, beautiful. But if you look at the bureaucrat, he just doesn't say anything. He stares. He's very quiet. He's eating clean, and all he says is, kill with extreme prejudice.
Yeah.
Whereas Harrison Ford, who's saying the exact same thing for a minute and a half, is saying, need to, you have to go find this guy and,
kill him.
Get rid of him.
Yeah.
It's hard for him to say it, because he's obviously a man who's been out in the battlefield.
And to keep going with that, you see Harrison Ford, not camo, but he's in the army greens, you know. He's straight up a soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the other guy, like we've been saying, is
white
shirt and tie, you know.
Interesting little analysis there.
That's good. BS him. Run with it.
Just go with it.
Yeah.
It's facts. What are you talking about? Do the research. Believe it.
One of the other things I remember about the film, and I noticed it even more in this one, this viewing, is you see a lot of aerial weapons that we used in the war, America used in the war, crashed and burned.
Oh, that's right. There's a couple downed helicopters.
Yeah, and the very large airplane that was just slammed into the river, and they go under it, and there's this huge, like, really cool panning.
Oh, yeah. It's this disorienting shot of going under the tail of the plane, right?
Yeah, and I don't know. I mean, like, to me it was just like, this was a war we were losing. No matter what giant iron beasts we could bring in the air, no matter what artillery we were bringing, we were losing.
We're still getting taken down by people who use arrows and spears.
Yeah. And dig holes and crawl through tunnels. Our giant air force couldn't do anything. I mean, our modern technology at the time was the helicopters, and even those were crashing and burning into the forest and stuff.
Hey, even a woman with a grenade can take down a helicopter.
Yeah.
Then and now.
Yeah.
That's one of the things I say this is parallel to
Iraq.
Today in Iraq and in the Middle East is that...
IEDs.
You can't trust anybody out there. And unfortunately, that's sad. We don't get political or religious on this.
I guess,
but it's... When you think about war, and there is no clear definition of what the mission is to a layman, to a regular citizen, you gotta wonder, why are we doing this?
Yeah.
You know, why was Kilgore taking out that entire village of women farmers? It's clear to him. Oh, they're the enemy. Let's take them out.
Yeah.
But as an outsider, you look at it and go, why are you doing this? You're the villain right now.
Mm-hmm.
You're not doing... They're no threat. They're a potential threat. But everyone's a potential threat. You're a potential threat.
Yeah.
You could leap across this desk right now and choke me. Candy would stop you. But you could. You are a potential threat, so I'm going to blow up your house. Oh, God!
You heard it now, people. My house is under a threat. And with Kilgore again, the whole reason he takes out the village, the point, to drop off their boat is not because it's his mission. It's because he wants good surf. So he's going to go wipe out the people living there.
So they're out of the way. So I can surf.
So he can surf.
Yeah. Or get oil, right? Oh, yeah. I don't mean to go there. Wait, what did I say? Man, I should edit that.
What's happening?
So in the end, I mean, this movie is really well done. And it holds up. Even watching the little 32 over there. Great picture. It's a high quality film. It's a lot of interesting cinematic, creatively edited, creatively shot things.
Oh, yeah.
And even if you can't appreciate and follow the story... Visually, it's a stunning film.
Beautiful film.
A technical achievement.
Yeah.
I say it all the time, practical is the way to go. They were obviously in Cambodia, going down a river.
Yeah, you feel it. You're in... that's the most important thing about this film, is it, to me, it immerses me. It immersed me into their dark world at the age of 11 or 12. I don't remember exactly what age. I was in middle school.
See, I, just to play the advocate, the other side of things, I'll disagree with you in, just slightly, that I don't feel like this is the most immersed you could get into a war. I think, though it does take you into it, being a, more of a character study, I don't think that, I think something that's a little more plot-driven might put you in the heat of battle a little bit more. But then at the same time, that might be my more modern mentality, like Saving Private Ryan,
where
that storming of Normandy Beach.
Oh, yeah.
Feels way, that opening to a movie is cinema. That's what movies are all about. The rest of the movie, no, I don't, when compared to Apocalypse, not much further than that. But that opening scene, storming of Normandy and Saving Private Ryan, you're there. Spielberg got a time machine, and he was there. This, a little bit of a product of its time, doesn't exist. It feels a little bit like Hollywood picture and less like being fully immersed. That's just me disagreeing with you. I just don't think it's as immersive as you seem to think it is. Put him up.
Well, maybe not in the sense of the whole Vietnam aspect. Like, you don't really see too much of the war. You see a lot of the effects of war around you the entire time.
There we go.
But I always feel like I'm there with them. And to me, that was what always grasped me. And maybe it's because it's so, like, poetic and almost like you're reading a book. Mm-hmm. Like, I always feel like I'm with these characters. I'm the seventh crew member.
Yeah, right.
And I didn't get shot.
Very good, very good. So, something we like to do here, now that we've kind of reached a good conclusion to our conversation. We could go on and on about this, but I think
most
got good information. Would you recommend this film to people? Would you say watch Apocalypse Now?
I am a big fanboy of the movie.
Right.
I mean, I really love this movie, and we both agree this is a wonderful film.
It does belong on the list of some of the best American films of all time. It's rightly so, it belongs on
it. Out of my favorite war films, it's this or Saving Private Ryan. They duke it out all the time in my brain, you know. Some days it's like, let's go storm Normandy. Other times, let's go to the heart of darkness.
Let's go get Colonel Kurse.
Yeah.
So instead of not necessarily recommending this, which obviously we are saying watch the movie.
Yes.
But what other recommendations could you make? If you like this, what else should you watch?
What else
could you watch as a gateway into this?
I think my recommendations might be a little odd.
That's
but,
fine. I recommended Apocalypse Now if you like Taxi Driver. So, I mean, there to go two back, I did recommend this as a company to Taxi Driver. So go ahead.
Well, I haven't had anybody tell me they didn't like this movie when I've showed it to them. So I recommend this movie to everyone. But as far as my recommendations go, I think Fight Club is a good one, because every time I watch this movie, afterwards, I'm always kind of like, man, I need a few minutes to like just kind of think, and Fight Club always does that to me. So, if you can watch Fight Club, you should be able to watch this movie. They are different in what they deal with, but I always feel like the heaviness of the story is just as heavy in both films, for me, personally.
Yeah.
I recommend Fight Club. The obvious choice is Saving Private Ryan. You know, you like war films. This is a war film, kind of, sort of. Check that out. Platoon is an easy choice
as
well.
Yeah, that's where I would have gone.
Yeah.
Just really a product of its time, especially Platoon.
Oh, and you get both Sheens.
Yeah, you do. You get Martin, you get Charlie. There you go, Platoon.
Woo!
I'd say... an older film. I'll give an older film and a modern film. If this is something that you really enjoy as far as a man on a mission, The Bridge Over the River Kwai.
Now, I haven't seen that, and it's on my list of shit I need to watch. Alec Guinness.
Yeah, it's a very Hollywood picture in the sense that, like I was saying about Heart of Darkness, about Apocalypse Now, where it feels like a movie.
Yeah.
Bridge Over the River Kwai, I think, is 60s, early 60s. It's a movie, and it has very, it's old style filmmaking where it feels very staged. But I think if you started with River Kwai, then you could watch Apocalypse Now, and then go to a modern recommendation. We said it before, The Hurt Locker.
Yeah, that was the one I was forgetting to say again.
If you want to build yourself up, man, there's a trilogy of films for you to watch for a day. Now, you've never seen Bridge Over the River Kwai, but man, that's a great film. That actually, there's a lot of parallels between that and Apocalypse Now, in that the general or the colonel or whoever he is that wants them to do what they're doing to this bridge, he's out of his mind.
Yeah.
And you slowly see him, that he's crazy over the course of this whole flick. You know,
kind of like that Nung, the bridge at the end of, towards the end of Apocalypse Now.
Right.
Where they're like, we keep building it, they keep blowing it up.
Yeah, yeah. And that, and the parallels between Apocalypse Now, yeah, that's great. Yeah. If Bridge of the River Kwai, Apocalypse Now, and then Hurt Locker, like we were saying before, which, Best Picture, 2009. Yep.
Wonderful.
Bigelow, to bring it all the way back to Bigelow. Oh, that's good. Tying it up.
Bookend!
But to see a man who can only exist in the heat of battle, who can only exist in war, Jeremy Renner as the bomb diffuser in The Hurt Locker, and what a tense film.
Oh my Jesus.
God. Yeah, that'll turn your stomach.
If you've seen The Deer Hunter, it's the Russian roulette scene, but that's the whole movie.
For 2 hours.
Yeah. The first time I saw it, I was watching it with a couple buddies in a garage, and we were all... Nobody was talking. Everybody's just on the edge of their seats.
Sweating.
Who are they going to kill next?
So, yeah. So those are my recommendations. Bridge Over River Kwai and The Hurt Locker. So.
And I think, for me, I'll stick with my Fight Club and Platoon.
Platoon.
And, well, Saving Private Ryan, but you're crazy if you haven't seen that yet.
Yeah, come on, man. What's wrong with you? I mean, it's not a Best Picture winner.
Well, that was bullshit. Yeah, but...
Hey. Shakespeare in Love, I think it was well deserving of all the.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, now touch me, babe. Can't you see that I am not afraid? What was that promise that you made? Why won't you tell me what she said? What was that promise that you made? Now I'm gonna love you till the heavens stop the rain. I'm gonna love you till the stars fall from the sky.
If Doctor Who was Amish, would he use an acoustic screwdriver? You're welcome. Anyway, thank you so much for
no problem.
For coming on
in, look forward to hopefully doing this again. I know we've talked about some other ones.
That's true. It's true. Hey, do you want to promote anything before we take off? Do you have a website that, or any projects you're gonna be releasing to the public anytime soon? Just want to plug anything. Now's your chance.
I believe
time's up. All right, everyone. Thank you for. No, go ahead.
I believe I'm doing a film, a short film coming up in the next couple weeks. Okay. With a guy you guys might know, sitting next to me, his name's TC.
Oh. That's me, oh my goodness. Well, I will be sure to link it once it's completed.
Yeah, and I think everybody will really dig it. At least we're hoping so.
We'll see. As long as we like it, right?
Yeah. And if I ever get back to reviewing my movies, I will make sure to plug next time I'm on this.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for checking us out. Ben has some reviews up on cinematicbenjamin.tumblr.com. Right, Ben? I bet you do, because I just sent people there. And as always, if you want to check out my stuff, you can go to tcdewittart.blogspot.com. And yeah, there we go. That's a podcast for you, folks. So, any final words?
Support film, go to the movies, stop pirating.
So why are you looking at me when you say that?
I don't have
the money to spend on movies legitimately. I'm gonna go. All right. Well, anyway. Okay, everyone, and as I like to always say, keep doing what you're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes and airplanes.
slash and burn, return. Listen to yourself churn. Locking in uniform and book burning, blood letting every motive escalate. Automotive centering, light a candle, light a motor, step down, step down. Watching heel crush, crush up. Oh, this means no fear. Cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine. I feel fine. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world as we know it. I feel fine. The other night I drifted nice, continental drifted by a mountain. Bernstein, Leonid, Brezhnev, Lenny, Bush, and Lester Banks. Birthday party, cheesecake, jelly bean, boom. Symbiotic, patriotic, slam, but neck. It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end.